How great is that theme song? That won't be the new theme for the Narrative First podcast, but it is a piece my son wrote. He's the mastermind behind the Narrative First theme, the podcast theme that you hear at the beginning of every podcast. But he just wrote this piece, and I thought it was so great. It's so epic, and I think it goes with the Red Lake, which we'll be getting into later on in the show. I just thought it was a great way to round out this season and to, you know, give some epic, grandiose flavor to the last podcast of this season. Hello, and welcome to another edition of the Narrative First podcast, the weekly podcast where story is always king. I'm your host, Jim Hull, the voice of Narrative First, and this is episode 57, The Narrative First Atomizer. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the season finale of season 2 of the Narrative First podcast. Today, I'll be wrapping up last week's story, The Red Lake. I'll be going over the main character, influence character, and relationship story through lines. As it is right now, as I'm beginning to record this podcast, I have absolutely no idea where I'll be going with it or what will be happening in the actual story. But again, with the same sort of technique that I used for the overall story, I'll go through and start to develop out potential ideas for the main character, influence character, and relationship. And you'll see how real quickly you can develop a really strong story, something that could, you know, inspire you to actually go off and write for months just by using the techniques that I go over in this episode. I'll also be doing an analysis of Thor Ragnarok, which I saw a couple weeks ago and I thought was great and had planned fully to do an analysis of it, but then got caught up working on the Atomizer and making sure that service was all ready for everybody. But then looking over the search results or the search requests for November, it seemed like a lot of people were looking for an analysis of it. So I will be doing that here. Answering listener mail about the crucial element and how it applies to steadfast characters. And, of course, talking about the Narrative First Atomizer, which is the service that I released on Thanksgiving of this year, which I'm incredibly excited about and can't wait to tell you all the different things you can do with it and things that you will be able to do with it in the weeks and months to come. First off, I want to talk about Thor Ragnarok. Now, Ragnarok is a different sort of comic book, Marvel comic book movie. In the, it's fun. It's actually really, really fun, and it's not overly serious, as opposed to some of them that can be quite painful to watch. This one is great, and it has everything to do with the director, writer-director Taika Waititi. Who's also the brains behind Hunt for the Wilder People and that vampire documentary, Things We Do in the Dark, something like that. So fantastic sense of humor and just really great sense of storytelling. And I almost feel like it's the same story form as Hunt for the Wilder People. And let me see, of course. Oh, interesting. I don't have the Wilder People story form set up in the Atomizer. That'll be something. That's the thing. Anytime I find any kind of story form that might be missing that I know the exact story form for, I'll be putting it up in the actual app. So let me see on the main site. I know I did a story forming series of it, and I can see I have the different through lines for Wilder People. If you haven't seen Hunt for the Wilder People, you definitely need to. Question is, oh, no, it's not the same. I thought maybe it was the same. Overall, and I actually haven't had a chance to write the analysis, and if you hear airplanes flying overhead, that's because I'm very close to all the fires here in Southern California. I'm really close to the lake where they fill up before they go and dump everything on the fires. Very close, so I might have to cut this podcast off short. It looks like Wilder People, the actual story form for it, is not the same as Thor Ragnarok, and the reason why is... See, I haven't even actually written the full analysis of Thor yet. I had completely forgotten it because I'd been so consumed with the Atomizer. The very clear story form, I mean, at least the main character resolve, the change from problem to solution, is from pursuit to avoidance, right? So Thor is completely, I just got to go in, head in, charge in, not even think about what's going on, and just pursue. Everybody's pursuing, you know, stopping this bad guy. And then the end solution is just to completely avoid him, to run away. And that seemed really, really strong to me. As far as influence character and relationship story through line, I'm sure it's a mix between Hulk and the other, the Valkyrie, probably more so the Valkyrie, at least the relationship. I'll have to see. I'm thinking if he's pursuit, and so this is how I would think about it. So let's say I go, this might be interesting actually. So I don't know the actual story form, and I'm not even using Dramatica, but let's say Thor is in universe, right? Because he's the guy that was, he's his father's son. He's that guy, right? And if his problem is pursuit and his solution is avoidance, that means I know that support and oppose are with pursuit and avoid in future under delay. And I only know that because, one, I just built an app that's based on every single story form. Two, I've done a ton of these analyses, and pursuit and avoid, I'm sure you've heard me mention before, is a very familiar sort of plot progression or narrative structure where it's, for the most part, actually it was the same exact story form as pretty much everybody's student film at CalArts, where pursuit, and then this is too hard to make my student film, so at the end I'll just run away and not do anything, and it tells a really nice story, plus everybody understands it. So I just know that support and oppose is the co-dynamic pair with pursuit and avoid in future under delay. So if that is his problem, if pursuit is his problem, that means it's a stop story, because the overall story is an activity. This isn't some psychological codependent family drama. Although that would make an interesting Marvel film. This one, again, is obtaining, which would be stopping the bad guy or destroying their land, which I can't even remember the name of it right now. So that would put self-interest, because the change character, Thor is the change character, right? Because he shares the same problem and solution as the overall story, that means that the problem and solution of the overall story and activity would be under self-interest, and those two are mixed. The codynamic pair is uncontrolled and controlled, control. So that means the symptom would be control and the response would be uncontrolled. So obviously that crazy Jeff Goldblum character is all about controlling everybody and making them fight for him, and everybody's trying to break free. So that feels good. And then I would cross-reference that. So now that I know where the main character and overall story through lines are, so the overall story through line is in physics and the main character through line is in universe, then I would look to see the influence character, which I know is between, see, I have to see it again, which isn't a problem because it's a great movie. It's between Hulk and the Valkyrie, which I can't think of her name. Let's see. So if the change character shares the problem and solution with the overall story, that means that the steadfast character shares the symptom and response. And those are the crucial elements for those different characters. So the influence character, symptom and response. So if her, let's say it's, oh, is it Hulk? Let's say it's Hulk. If his symptom is control and his response is uncontrolled, you could come down into mind, and you know that in mind, the external elements, the action elements are mixed with the decision elements under mind. So that means control and uncontrolled are mixed with the logic and feeling. So that means that the influence character is driven by logic, and then their solution is feeling, where occasionally they'll have feelings. So maybe it is the Valkyrie. Maybe she's the one, she's completely rational, just doing what is best for her in whatever situation, taking the most reasonable route. And so that would mean she's driven by logic, and occasionally when she has feelings, when she actually cares about what happens to Thor, she loosens up. But for the most part, she's all about logic. And then finally, when it comes to the relationship story, all you do is look at the story outcome. So the story outcome is either success or failure. So this is a Marvel comic book superhero movie. It's success because they do end up, don't they end up defeating him? I can't even remember how they end up defeating him. I've been so obsessed with programming. He does get beat, doesn't he? Or do they run away and it just fails? Hold on a second. Let me see this. Looking up the plot for Thor. Let's see here. What happened at the end? Oh, while Hela is distracted, Loki locates Surtur's crown and places it in the internal flame. Surtur is reborn and destroys Asgard, seemingly killing... The heck is Hela? Is Hela the big dude? Oh! Right. Wow, why did I totally forget her? The firstborn child. Is she the influence character? Thor and the others escape with... Okay, Thor facing Hela, loses an eye, and then has a vision of Odin that helps him realize only Ragnarok can stop Hela. The heck was Ragnarok again? While Hela is distracted, Loki looks at her and places it... Reborn and destroys Asgard, seemingly killing Hela. Okay, yeah. So it's a success. It's stopping Ragnarok from happening. And the only way to stop is running away. Thor and the others escape with Asgard's remaining citizens aboard the Grandmaster's vessel. Thor, now king, decides to take his people to Earth. They're intercepted by a large spacecraft. Okay. So yeah, so that would be a success story. So when you have a success story... The relationship story through line shares the same symptom and response as the overall story through line. In a failure story, for some reason, and I don't know why this works, it shares the same problem and solution. So because we're talking about a success story here in Ragnarok, that means that the relationship story between, well, since now I have it open, between Thor and, why won't they just give me her name? Oh my gosh. Thor crash lands. He's captured by a named Scrapper142. Okay, so her name is Scrapper142. Did they never mention her? Maybe that's why I don't remember her name. Let's see. Oh, they don't even list her. What? Why is she not listed as the... Oh, I guess just Valkyrie. Okay. Tessa Thompson, right? Because... Okay, so the relationship with him and Scrapper142, the Valkyrie... It will have the same symptom response as the overall story. So the symptom will be control and, yeah, trying to control. And then, of course, they have uncontrolled feelings for each other. That would be the response. And that would mean in Under Becoming, which is their relationship about becoming as it's growing into something, that the motivating force behind their relationship is conscience or a lack of conscience, because she seemingly has no lack of conscience. Of doing the right thing is what's at odds with them, and then eventually they both give in to temptation. But they don't get it. They don't get together at the end. So that is how. I mean, once I actually write the analysis, it'll probably make sense. And if I'd seen the film, the problem is when I was watching the film, when I first watch a movie, I don't sit there and think, "Oh, story form." I actually enjoy it, and when it's a film that's really hilarious and really funny, and I just get caught up in it. I still could tell the pursuit of void dynamic was super obvious. And I knew that like coming out of the theater. But as far as everything else goes, I just wasn't really thinking about it. But when I look back at it now, it starts to make more sense. But that's how I go about, even without having Dramatica open at all, I would be able to see, oh, okay, this is, you know, or even the Atomizer, because the Atomizer, you can actually get to it really quick, which I'll talk about later. The way to a story form is just... looking to see what the problem elements are. And a lot of that has to do with just familiarizing yourself with all the different elements and knowing exactly what goes into, not so much the definitions, but how they work in other stories. So if you can look and see, oh, how is pursuit a problem in this film? Or how is avoid a problem in this film? It's much easier. It's kind of like you get to have the experience of what those elements are. How those elements are problems, as opposed to just a definition that you just look at and it's like, oh, okay, well, you know, let's see the definition. Let me show you how quick it is, even though you can't actually watch. Just log in here because apparently I can't remember to log in. Okay, so you just look up pursuit and boom, I go to the terminology entry and yeah, directed effort to resolve a problem, to seek, to go after. Couple gists, chasing girls, tracking down someone, following something, stalking something. Like the gists definitely make it a lot easier because everybody has had an experience of, well, not necessarily chasing girls, but chasing something, tracking down someone, being chased by something, following something. Everybody's had that experience, so they can relate better to how pursuit would be a problem where it's like, well, when I'm stalking something or if I'm stalking someone, that can tend to cause a lot of conflict. Oh, I can see how pursuit could be a problem here. So for Thor is always charging in, you know, always pursuing, always going after the bad guy. And it's only when they turn and tuck tails and run that they're actually able to solve things. I think if they had kept pursuing, Ragnarok would have happened and everything would have been destroyed. Instead, he runs away, and that's what actually solves the problem. So familiarizing yourself with the elements and having the experience of going through and watching the different films, you know, if you come up with a story form that feels pretty strongly for your story, but you're not sure about some of the elements, actually watch some of the films that are similar, that have either the same exact story form or similar elements to it. And that way you can experience what it's like to see those problems or those elements in conflict and see how they come up as different problems. And then that way, when it comes time to actually figuring out the story form, or if it's a film you've seen or something that you've written, but you're not sure exactly where the story form is coming from, you can easily and quickly figure out that narrative just by virtue of the elements. I was working with a writer I guess it was 2 weeks ago now, who had a really great idea, a very clear sense of what he wanted his story to be about. And I'm trying to think of how I can say it without saying it all, but that the I guess let's just say he had explained the story idea, and I was trying to get to the essence, not so much the plot, like, oh, well, when does he go to the belly of the beast, and when does he refuse the call three times? Not that nonsense, but more about what was the intent behind the piece, what was the message you wanted to get, which is essentially the argument, which shows up in the story form. And he explained it to me, and it was clear to me where the problem was. I guess I could just say, well, let's just say it was a main character problem of, let's see here. Let's say it was, because I don't want to say the story because it's a really cool idea. And I'm a therapist and I don't want to talk about my patients, my story patients with other patients. So let's say it was just really clear that the main character was all about trying to look good in front of other people, okay? And in the overall story, there was some kind of mystery going on. Nobody knew what it was. This isn't really what the story is, but I'm just trying to make it up off the top of my head. So all I did was I went into he explained it, and because I hadn't figured out the story form ahead of time. So I just went into the search feature in the atomizer, and I just typed in MC problem of perception. It was actually a different element, but I will say MC problem of perception. And I hit enter, and instantly I got to see in this other instance, two or three different films that had the same exact main character problem of perception. And then when I clicked into them and saw the full story form and compared the dynamics, they all matched the same, which is the typical setup of, you know, the change doer linear main character dynamics and the plot story dynamics of an action driver, an option lock, success and good. And so right there from my phone, which is the best part about it, because you don't have to lug around the laptop and wait for everything to load up, from my phone, I was able to see instantly, like, oh, okay, this is what your story form is. And then began to build out the story right there at lunch. And that to me is the rapidity, the rapidness. As you can tell, I haven't been writing much lately. The speed at which that we were able to come up with it and actually develop and come up to a concrete narrative, it's great. It's super exciting, because before I had to keep a lot of it in my head, and I could sort of quadrangulate the story form in the way that I just explained to you how I did with Thor. But this way I can just see it real quickly and be able to confirm it, because sometimes your mind can play tricks on you, and you think you know where the elements are and you think you know what stuff is, and then it will flip around on you, which is a funny experience. But just because, you know, in conversation, what he was talking to me about, it's as if, you know, like Dramatic Story Expert ships with 12,000 gists. And I'm planning on adding tons and tons and tons more. Every time there's something there, just keep adding to it. And so it's almost as if I have developed a gist awareness of elements. So when somebody talks or speaks to me or communicates to me, tells me what their story is about, I'm looking for the gist of what it is that they're saying, and I look for the actual element behind the words that they're saying. And it was really clear from this writer what the element was behind. And then when I just looked it up, I got the story form right away. So, I mean, I'm not sure everybody wants to be a story consultant, although I got to say it's an amazing profession. If you're writing your own stories and you want to quickly figure out what it is, or if you want to write a short story and you just want to get it out really quickly, the more you understand and have an awareness of what the different elements mean and how they work as problems in different stories, the quicker and more assured, more confident you can be about your choices in the different story forms. The more confident you can be about your choices going forward. So I will have, I'm going to do Throughline Thursdays, which is great too. I figured out a really cool way to just dynamically create those. If you're a fan of the site, you know, this year, I believe it was this year, maybe it was last year, I started Throughline Thursdays, where you have that big red, it was based on slides that I used to do for my CalArts students, in trying to explain the different through lines and how the different genres work. I was able to figure out a way to do it in the Atomizer so that it just dynamically shows up and you can actually click on the different through lines to jump to those through lines in the story form. And then, of course, I'm including the synopses of the Throughline Thursdays, the articles that you can read on the site, but just in reference to that particular through line. So if you've noticed over the past couple months, in preparation for this, when you go through a Throughline Thursday, every paragraph is essentially a different through line. So those different paragraphs associated to the different through lines are now available in the actual story forms. So, and I've got tons and tons of different ideas of really cool stuff. So anyways, so the Throughline Thursdays for Thor will be up by the time this podcast is out, and the analysis. And of course, you can always open it in the Narrative First Atomizer. To listener mail, which I had no idea that last one would be so intense. Let's see here. Okay. So a listener writes in and asks, "Hello, sorry for reaching out to you once more. By the way, it's no problem whatsoever to write and ask me questions, theory questions. Part of the release of the Atomizer, I actually have for people who are part of the service, there's a really quick way you can ask me any kind of question, like theory question, of course, if there's, and those take priority over everything else. So if you have an actual theory question, like how would this work? How would a main character signpost two of doing work in this story? And then I can quickly answer that for you. That's something I want to be able to make available so that it just, it feels like if you're able to ask a question and get it answered quickly, then you'll be able to, you know, keep writing and keep that flow going. So it's no issue actually writing a question. If I understood it right, this is the question. A steadfast main character doesn't share the problem and solution with the overall story, but instead he shares the symptom and solution. Although not every main character is a he. Sometimes there's some she main characters. And that is correct, just like I was talking about in Thor. How does that play out? Does the main character know where to focus? All right. Does he know where to focus his intention to solve his personal problems and mistakenly assumes the same applies to the overall story, only to be proven wrong? It feels harder to understand than a change character having his problem and solution being played out in the overall story, like in Casablanca, for example, with a character controlling his feelings just like Nazis are trying to control Europe in a larger scale. And that's because you've just had more experience with changed main characters. I mean, it's just overwhelmingly, that's the culture. The American Western culture prefers the changed character. And in the last 30 years, they've been told your main character has to have some huge significant change. So they feel like that's the only narrative that works. So it's just a matter of, again, becoming familiar with how symptom and response, how those crucial elements work for the main character. So the crucial element for the thing that connects the main character with the overall story, besides his unique ability and critical flaws, the crucial element down at the very bottom. And again, that's the problem and solution for the change characters, and then symptom and response for the steadfast characters. Now, with the change characters, if it is a success story, the main character has the problem element, which you can see in Thor, right? So it's a success story. He has the problem element of pursuit, and it has to be the Valkyrie because she would have the solution element, which is avoidance, which is she's always trying to escape or avoid any kind of conflict, avoid getting into trouble. So yeah, I would say she is the influence character. So that's how the dynamic works with a changed main character. If it's a, oh, and by the way, too, in the Atomizer, which I'm just going to be talking about a lot because I'm sorry, I'm super excited about it and I just want everybody to know how it all works. I went through and for the resolve, I just made it changed. Chris had mentioned at one users group meeting, you know, really it should be changed, but, you know, that doesn't work in all cases either, which I understand. But if you think of the resolve in terms of, you know, it's the difference between the end and the beginning, you're looking at that state. Like, how is that state? And change implies process. Steadfast implies process as well, too. But changed really implies that state change. So the resolve is all about the state change in the main character, and the growth is that process, stop or start. So I just thought it would be great to make it changed. So in all the story forms that you find in the Atomizer, in the main character resolve, it actually says changed. And that to me is super exciting that I'm able to do that. So that's how the crucial element works for the change character. So then for a steadfast character, it's the symptom and response. And I believe, isn't it, whether or not it's stop or start? So if it's, if the growth is stop, then the main character crucial element will be the symptom. And if it's start, then his main character element will be the response, which is funny too. That's the other thing I've changed. So a lot of the stuff on the Atomizer, I use the original terminology because it's become really clear to me, as you've heard on the podcast, that people learn the actual concepts behind the words when they revert back to the original terminology. Now, originally, symptom and response were focus and direction, which is way better because it's not so much, not everything's a symptom, not everything's a response. It's more about where the attention is being placed. So the attention, the focus in a stop story, that's where the main character would be. Whereas the direction in a start story, that's where the main character, a steadfast main character, would be. So that's also encoded in there. And so it's very opinionated. You know, my favorite writer to write all the articles and everything I do is IA Writer, which I talked about last week or in the last podcast. And they're very opinionated. You can't install fonts. Maybe you can hack it, but they don't have, you know, they might have two or three different options. And for the longest time, for 5 years, they just had one font, which I thought was great because I wouldn't noodle around with how things look. It was more about the content. And then they just released a duo spaced font, which is, it's very subtle, the differences, but it's beautiful and really a joy to write in. So I want to take the same approach with the Atomizer, where it's very opinionated. So this is my opinion as to what is the best way to use the dramatic theory of story, or the best way to learn the dramatic theory of story, in order to apply it practically, because I've had lots of experience applying it practically. And this is, my experience has been less so much about changing it to make it easier to understand and perhaps to sell more, but more about what's the most practical, what's the very best way to get the most effective results from the work. And so that it means you'll have to focus a little bit harder, but you know, it'll be, you'll focus, you have to focus on it, but you'll learn a lot more and you'll be a much better storyteller because of it. So my fallback steadfast character is always William Wallace Braveheart. So I knew Mel Gibson before. So, I mean, not personally, but I knew of him before. So yeah, I bring that up, and the overall story is in, oh, you'll also notice too, I made it so that the through line order, this is a super dramatic and geeky thing. In every story form, the through line order was or is in the Z pattern. So universe always comes first, regardless of through line, then physics, then psychology, and then mind. My original intention had been to make it a completely interactive story form, and perhaps eventually I will do that. But the sheer volume of information for right now, it doesn't really work. The first release, which you can see in the video, although I'll probably update it by the time it's here, just had a list of the different elements, kind of like what you find on the Dramatica site. But I got really excited about finding ways to dynamically provide the information in such a way that it's more visually pleasing. And you can actually learn more. Like the signposts actually have color coded so that you can see the difference between a two-act, three-act, and four-act structure there. So looking at the, and this, you know, it's the last podcast of the year, last of season two. And so I'll hopefully you'll be okay with me going just a little bit over as I try to get everything out there. So looking at the focus and direction of the overall story. Okay. So the focus for Braveheart is logic and the direction is feeling. So I guess that would mean the crucial element of William Wallace is logic and the direction is feeling. That's very funny because I would almost say it's the opposite because, let me look something up. Let me just make sure. Well, so it would be stop. I have to think about this. So if William Wallace, if his element is logic, I just felt like he was so passionate, and then Robert the Bruce would be more logic. But I guess, does he go with his feelings, and then Wallace is logic? Is he more rational? Okay, so then what I would probably do, let's see if I click on logic. That's the other thing. Every element is completely interactive. You click logic in the overall story, and instantly you jump to overall story symptom of logic. And you get to see all the films where the overall story symptom is logic. And that would be Barefoot in the Park, Big, Braveheart, Kramer versus Kramer, American President, Washington Square. So I know Big, he's steadfast, right? Yeah, same thing. So logic, feeling, although he's a universe character. Problem of conscience. That's interesting. Okay, now I'm switching to Big. Now I'm all over the place. So logic and feeling, how does that work? I see a film where, well, in Big, what's her name is the influence character, Susan, right? The woman he meets as an adult. And she's very definitely feeling, but as far as logic, it's funny, logic doesn't really come up a lot in different story forms. So if I went to logic and I just looked at the gist, using sound judgment. So when you go to the entry for logic, you get, I throw up 10 random gists there and then, you know, just to give you a basic idea of it. And then obviously you can see all of them. Using sound judgment, looking for causes and effects. Okay, so I can see looking for causes and effects in Wallace for sure. I mean, he's all about if we don't do this now, we're just all going to die. I just feel like he's more feeling oriented. Being a brain, being rational. I would say being irrational for sure. Although, okay. So for every element too, and it may seem like, oh, well, you're just trying to bend the story form to fit the story that's there. In a sense, that happens no matter what, because the story form are different touch points that work together and form kind of the holistic representation of the argument you're trying to make. So yeah, you're going to pull them away. They're not going to be these absolute filled in boxes. And the leeway you have is the positive or negative amounts of it, kind of like how it can bend one direction or the other before it snaps and ends up in a different location. So, you know, being irrational is not being overly passionate. Being irrational is still a logic element. You're actually showing how somebody who focuses on all the irrational things that are going on. Yeah, that could be William Wallace. And I haven't seen Big enough, so I'll just stick with the Braveheart example. So that would be a negative way of looking at a gist. Or, you know, a different way of looking at, you know, what's interesting? I wonder, is being irrational in here? I don't think it is. You know, there needs to be more. See, this is what I'm talking about. So I'll see this, right? And I'll think, well, being irrational is in there. And then just looking at the gist that ship, it's not in there. There's being illogical, but not being irrational. So what I will do is I will just jot that down in my handy dandy things to do. Oh, it's funny. I have to fix the Tarzan story form. I have a Tarzan story form from the Disney film from 99, which was the first film I ever animated on. And I looked at the story form. I looked it up. And I was like, wow, this is so incredibly wrong. So it's really obvious what the story form is. That'll be fixed and put in there. Okay, so add to logic. So I'm just adding there, being irrational. Now that shows up for everybody that is working with the Narrative First Atomizer. That's really there. So being irrational. So there, that would be his crucial element. That's how the focus works. So this gets back to the listener mail. This is going to be a really long podcast, but it's good if you love Dramatica and you love learning stuff like that. So then let's look at feeling for Robert the Bruce. And let's see, being happy. He's not very, being angry, being empathetic. I could see him being empathetic towards the nobles, the noblemen, right? Trying to keep them happy, being sentimental. And he's definitely gets overwhelmed by his feelings, lacking feelings for something. Yeah, I could see that. I definitely could see that. So then you have the main character symptom and response. So then how does that work when it comes? Let's get back to that original question. How does that work, you know, with the change character? It's like, oh, that it makes sense how it works in the change character, especially with Casablanca, because the control is the same thing as control there. How does that work with the overall story? So for Braveheart, obviously he's being, or he focuses on how the cause and effect, like he just sees how there just seems to be a loss of rational thinking. And then he takes all kinds of irrational actions, which other people point to as like, well, that's, you know, you're just doing things you really shouldn't be doing. That's the completely illogical what you're doing, both from Robert the Bruce, the nobleman, and even people that are on his side, on Wallace's side, and then also the king for sure. That's where they're focused. But then when they look and he sees Robert the Bruce, he even brings up like, which is, you should see how he inspires the people, and that would be the feeling part of it. That is the work that needs to get done in order to free up the problem and solution, you know, and the work, the time spent working that symptom and response, working that focus and direction is what frees up kind of the resistance there for the influence character to finally have that change. And I believe he goes from conscience to temptation, where he just is like, he's always trying to do the right thing, trying to play it safe, and then he just gives in at the end and charges across the field. So, and that only happened because of the work that was put into it. So my response was, the steadfast character actually shares the same symptom and response with the overall story. If you think about it, it makes sense. The steadfast character continues to do the work they know to be appropriate. They respond to the symptom and make it possible for the change character to replace their problem with the solution, thereby making it possible for the overall story to end in success. Of course, this is all assuming a successful story outcome. If you think of Braveheart, everyone's focusing on doing what's the most reasonable thing. Oh, okay, I did answer this already. It's only once Wallace comes in and starts putting some passion there and getting people to really feel what it's like to have a place of your own that Robert the Bruce is finally able to overcome his conscience and do the right thing. Okay, so that, there you go. So that's the connection between the two. And you can see, so the difference between that feeling between a changed narrative and a steadfast narrative, the changed narrative is all about what's going on underneath and how that can, getting to the place where that can be flipped, where it can be resolved within the main character. In a steadfast character, it's more the focus is on outside of them, you know, staying true to the work that needs to be done, you know, continuing to focus on the apparent symptoms, and then moving, you know, taking the direction and responding to those symptoms and actually making the space, freeing up that resistance for the influence character to have their change. And I will leave a link in the show notes to other articles about the crucial element that I have written in the past, and that you can learn more about it there. And again, if you have any questions about anything like this, always, always, always feel free to write in, and I will answer them as best I can. Back to the Red Lake. If you haven't listened to the previous episode's podcast, Story Structure Senioritis, you want to make sure you listen to that first, because in that I came up with a completely random story. And the way I did it is I used the Storytime feature in the Atomizer, where if you go down to the bottom of every story form, there's a little button, Storytime this narrative, you click it, and it gives you a completely random story based on that story form. And I had chosen the same story form that was for Aliens and Blade Runner. And I also realized it's the same incomplete story form for the first Harry Potter book, because I don't believe there's much of a relationship story in that first novel. It's all the same sort of story form. And because I was in the same headspace, I figured that would be a great way to work on it. So I came up with a random story form, which I developed out the overall story last week about a group of dwarves who chance upon a lake, a once pearl blue lake that has turned crimson red. And, you know, maybe it's like the turning or something that's what happens at this time. And eventually they come into conflict with a bunch of halflings who are there up in the mountains, and they don't want anybody to know about their fountain lake. So they drive out the dwarves. And the really cool part was that the quote unquote bad guys were the protagonist, one of the halflings, and that the antagonist, sort of good guy, but kind of just on the outside, would be your Gandalf wizard sort of guy who's trying to get them to conceptualize a way to actually, you know, live in harmony, peace and harmony. And of course that's not going to happen, because the halflings are successful in making sure nobody knows what the heck this Fountain of Youth is all about. They're unable to decipher what the meaning of the Red Lake is. And you leave it up for the next novel, right? The next different different novels in the series. So what I want to do here, and only because this podcast is running super long, I just kind of want to not blow through it, but just provide an example of then what you would do for the other three lines in order to build out the story. And this is totally off the cuff, so I haven't really looked at it. I do know the main character will be one of the dwarves, because they are the quote-unquote good guys. And I believe the influence character, I don't want it to be the wizard. I just like the idea of him just kind of being, just doing his wizardly things on the side and not really being part of the emotional argument. And I guess I could probably see the protagonist. So if the influence characters slash protagonist is one of the halflings, like maybe one of their leaders or something, and that's who the dwarf comes into emotional conflict with, I think that could be actually really compelling. So that's what I will do. So again, there's a live document that I have up on Quip, which I think I came to the conclusion today, I'm just completely done with Slack. I can't stand how it has gigantic memory leaks, and I just want to lose it. So I think I'm going to go 100% with Quip here. And so, yeah, there's a live document, the Red Lake, which there will be a link. There's a link last week's show notes, and then, of course, in this week's show notes. So the main character will be one of the dwarves, and the influence character slash protagonist will be the leader of the halflings. I don't know their names yet. I'll have to come up with some fantasy names. And the antagonist is the gray wizard, right? The gray wizard. And perhaps I can come up with something a little more original than that. But you get the idea. He wants them to conceptualize a way to live together in peace and harmony. Okay, so let's just focus. What I usually do is focus on the main character, because that's the most fun. And okay, so looking at the main character here, being stuck in an attic. Oh, that's not good. Let's see here. Okay, so his domain is being stuck in an attic, concerned, studying historical records of something, issue, interceding for someone, and problem, loving a particular group. Okay, and his solution, it's a change story, being someone competent. Oh, okay, this is great. So maybe his drive, so loving a particular group is really interesting, because if you just make him this history buff, and you have to do more than just make him a history buff, because then you're just using the different gists as storytelling points. They have to actually be sources of inequity. There actually has to be conflict there. Yeah, it's great. Oh, I'm a history buff. Well, why is that a problem? Well, the problem is every single thing you do is based on what used to be. So every single conversation is about the past. And if things aren't lined up with the past, and it's not exactly, you know, you have nothing to look up to see how you're supposed to react, you have no basis for doing anything. You just have this overwhelming love for your people, and for, you know, it's like somebody who's so obsessed with their family and how great things were when they were growing up. And then they just try to repeat that. And the problem with that is this is a different situation. It's a different group of there's different things going on. Like in the past, maybe dwarves were, you know, the amazing, you know, I know they're supposed to be amazing miners or whatever. And maybe they were the ones who ruled the land and that was great. And that's where his headspace is. I wish I could come up with a name, but I'm not going to be able to come up with one right now. Completely obsessed with the legacy of his people that he keeps trying to repeat it. And the problem with that is the situation has changed. Like, they don't have the same resources. They don't have the same Their people are tired. He's tired. So this is the main character. So in a broader sense, you know, it's the universe. It's the people, the dwarf people. So again, situation, that's not, he's in a situation, he's stuck in an attic. No, it's more like he's stuck, if you think of this, the attic more as like a far-off place that nobody ever ventures to. So whatever that land is that the dwarves are from, or that mine that they're from, that's where his head always is. He's always back in that place. He's always trying to bring back the good old days. It's like those people that dress up from the 50s when they go to Disneyland all the time, but as if you did it all the time. And you're so obsessed with how great things were, you never like actually move forward because you're just kind of repeating everything. And unless you have that comfortable, it's like being comfortable. Okay, so that would be his personal problem. So his desire to be comfortable undermines his ability to actually, you know, step up and save his people. Now, at the end, it's a success, good story. So at the end, he's going to feel good about it. And he's going to be brought to a place where he is actually able to be competent. So instead of having a love for his people and having that be, you know, he's always kind of relying on other people to take care of him and always relying on the community of dwarves to rise up, you know, hey, remember how things used to be? It used to be great. And we can, you know, let's try and let's make sure that our legacy continues. And we can't let our legacy die. Eventually, it's like, yeah, we can let our legacy die. It's like, you know, in the end, he realizes, yes, we can let our legacy die. And it's enough to be, competent to simply save yourself, maybe? Maybe instead of all the... I could make it dark instead of saving everybody. He's basically saves himself. Oh, that's interesting. So if he saves himself, which makes it possible or makes it, I'm trying to work in the overall story solution of ability, you know, like his, it doesn't always have to be tied in, but let's say his competency makes it a lot easier for the halflings to drive the dwarves out. Makes it possible for the halflings to drive the dwarves out. And that will be because, oh, and that's because he lets the past go and all the history that the dwarves could have used to understand and overcome the halflings. So that's really interesting. So this becomes a very complex sort of story that's going on there. So that's good enough for right now. And so he's completely obsessed with that idea. And just as I'm in the same headspace, I would go through and look to the act order and see where he grows in each signpost and just come up with a basic idea. So he being inducted into the Hall of Fame is the first signpost. Diminishing someone or something is the second signpost. Time traveling somewhere in the future, interesting, is the third. And then fourth is being hip to something. So that is a three-act sort of structure where it's the past, then he has a switch into the progress, which slides into the future, and then he switches into being hip to something. Being inducted into the Hall of Fame, I could see, in other words, like the history books. So the dwarves I believe they're on their way out, and he is personally, now this seems like, okay, he's focused on everybody else. So if we just keep it about him being inducted into the Hall of Fame, he wants to make sure no matter what, he's responsible for the legacy of the dwarves. Okay, maybe he's the last in a long line, and he can't. Maybe there's something a little more personal. He can't, connect with anybody, and so this is it. Like he's going to be the last, and he wants to make sure that their knowledge is kept for all time, and so he'll do anything to make sure they stay alive. So when you find a fountain of youth that is going to keep everybody, it's like, this is perfect. This is exactly what I've always needed, and now I just need to understand how this all works out. So diminishing something, that is, let's see, as they're trying to learn, diminishing something. That's an interesting one. Let's see. So again, I would probably just jump over to the atomizer, and I would look up. I know progress is the thing there. Something declining, speeding up, improving one situation, decaying of a neighborhood, diminishing something, decaying of a neighborhood. So I would almost think there's a huge switch, and like his health actually increases. So you can take the gist, and same thing, positive, negative, and it could be his diminishing health, declining health standards. But what if his health standards are improving since he's been in there? All of a sudden, all of a sudden he looks 10 years younger. And what that does is that really messes with his drive to like keep that alive. Cause now it's like, oh cool. I'm going to keep this alive forever. It's going to always live within me. I'll always be around to keep up the history. So then time traveling somewhere in the future. So then, and then at the midpoint of the overall story, that's when they wipe out all the dwarves that went up there. Maybe he's the only one that survived. And so he comes down, and now it's about time traveling somewhere in the future. Now, you could use the literal translation of that, and the Grey Wizard probably hooks him up with some way that he can, be able to fulfill all this or see how things will be in the future. But I would say, if he projects forward and he's always thinking of the future, always thinking of like, well, if I can somehow manage to control this stuff or understand the secret behind the Red Lake, then I can make sure that we always have a long and prosperous future. And maybe he makes some decisions that, people really close to him perish, right? Makes bad decisions because of the future he wants so badly. All right, so then there's some conflict there. And then that would be some huge thing. And then finally it's like, all right, being hip to something. So in other words, present, it's just like, do whatever I can to survive. Then maybe that's when he abandons everybody. Abandons everyone. Well, I don't know if he would abandon everyone. I don't know if that's such a happy thing. But maybe it's just enough. Instead of worrying so much about keeping the legacy and all that stuff, let's just focus on the present. So if you think of his growth from the past to present, in the beginning, he's like, I just got to keep this up. No matter what happens, I've got to keep the legacy of the dwarves up. And now it's just like, you know what? Let's just live for today. And I'm just going to live for today and just be happy with what I can do to enjoy my life in the here and now. So abandons having to secure the legacy of the dwarves, and so they're gonna die out, right? Like this will be the last of the dwarves, which maybe that's a better title, I don't know. Okay, so that's his main character growth, and there you can see, let's see, how much time have I done? 15 minutes, I've built out the main character. So if I'd done this right after the overall story, it's not even been an hour and already I know half the entire narrative. And now what I would do is I would drop in those signposts within the different sequences. And by the time you listen to this or over the holiday break, I will build out all those sequences and you'll be able to see how that works out. And what I do is then I just start weaving in the main character's signposts into those different overall story sequences. Not actually a part of the sequences. I'll probably make them separate sequences. And you'll be able to see that as I go through and start to build that out for you, so you can see how that actually works. And this is, of course, what I do with the deliberate storytelling with clients, where actually sit down and we do this for your particular story. Let's see. So, okay. So signpost 1, 2, 3, 4 for the main character. You do all that stuff. Then, and you find places where they fit naturally in the storytelling. And then what I do is I go back and I look at the influence character. Now, for the sake of time, I will do less work than I did for the other ones. Oh, rad. Okay. So the influence character, his domain is fearing injury. His concern is forgetting someone's name. His issue is questioning someone or something. And problem, appearing to be someone. Okay. So I'm not going to actually go through his signpost. I'm just going to show you a really cool thing with the atomizer that you can do, the influence character. So we have fearing injury. So that obviously is going to be all about not wanting to, again, same thing, where he doesn't want to die. So whereas, you and I are both alike, whereas the dwarf is all about not wanting the legacy of the dwarves to die out, this guy is just all about himself. He doesn't want to get hurt because maybe there's something that happened. When you get hurt, it's harder to keep up that youthful drive that comes from the Red Lake or whatever. And maybe that's the secret that they don't want anybody to know. There's something there. Something there with the secret. Forgetting someone's name is the concern. Questioning someone or something and appearing to be someone. Now, if you go into... So questioning someone is the issue. So let's do that. Of course, I picked the hardest thing. So if you were to go to the atomizer, and that is an issue of suspicion, right? So if you look up suspicion, and if you don't spell it right, which is great for prerequisites, it gets pretty close. And you go being wary of a group, being dubious, being sensibly cautious, being paranoid. Okay, so definitely... being paranoid is something. If you go to more gists and you look to questioning, what was it? It was questioning someone or something. So I've broken it down to either questioning someone or something. So what would questioning something? If you put, interesting. Okay. So if you open up questioning something right now, I have a bunch of just basic general subjects. So instead of just questioning something, it might say questioning a diorama, questioning a disaster area, questioning a funhouse, questioning a jungle, questioning a mall, questioning a loveless marriage. It gives you all kinds of different ideas of where you could take that. And the next thing I have to add in here are the gist collections, the narrative first gist collections, which I did, you know, previously to work with Dramatica, where you can build up westerns, science fiction. There's obviously fantasy, which might be nice here. But then, you know, it's always good to mix them from different genres. So maybe I would open up the Western one and questioning the sheriff, and then that would give you something to build off of that halfling. That would be something completely different than what you had originally thought of. So questioning something, maybe questioning the lake, maybe that could be like, you don't question, questioning the lake is an issue for him. So you never, it's like this thing where it's like, things are so good that you suspect, like, if I bring up anything or I try to question what this lake is all about, it's going to go away. And the problem with that is that holds you back. It creates a lot of paranoia within you. And, it keeps you from taking action. Actually, what it does is it motivates you to take action that you wouldn't normally take, which in this case is to be, halflings are supposed to be nice people. And I forgot to play against that. But this guy, because he's the leader and because he's so... just driven by this fountain of youth thing that's going on, I really like the idea that he's questioning the lake is an issue for him. So it's almost like questioning the lake is an issue for this halfling. It's like so paranoid about messing up his good thing that he'll go against his true nature in order to stay alive, motivates really bad decision making. And of course I would come up with specifics of that, but now, and you put that again, that issue that just makes it worse, the fearing injury, because it's like, there's no way. I was thinking, because he's so paranoid about being hurt or actually getting cut, and he doesn't want to mess with it or even like check to see, he never ventures down to the Red Lake, maybe except occasionally when he has to replenish, because he doesn't want to mess it up. And maybe that keeps other halflings from going down there when they really should, and they die off. And it also makes it, he doesn't want that's where that paranoia. It's like this complete paranoid group of halflings just because of this one guy, because of his problem. And that eventually motivates the main character to change and actually just be, you know, he's just like, well, whatever I can do. Like, I don't want to question anything. I don't want anymore. I just want to do what I can do to survive, just like this guy is, and I'm out of here. So that's how I would develop out the influence character. And again, the atomizer gives you like tons of really great ways to play with that. And then, or, you know, at least to inspire different ideas. And then finally, the relationship story. And again, I would also do the signposts for that influence character and see how that works in there. And then finally, the relationship story through line. Real quickly, coping, planning. Okay, coping is the domain. Concern is planning to run away. Issue is being bitter. Problem is being adaptive to a particular group. And solution, oh, rad, following someone's traditions. Whoa, okay. So this whole relationship stuff, this is just going to be adversaries. So it's separate from the overall story in that you have this like drive to kind of figure out, you know, dwarves versus halflings. But now what if the coping part is like, all right, well, it's like we have to integrate. It's like an integrated society, like the South, where it's like black and white. You have to integrate and everybody has to play nice. Well, now what's that relationship like, the coping part of it? And how can we actually, is there any kind of relationship there? Is there any kind of friendship? And maybe this would be like kind of like an adversarial relationship that turns friendship at the end, where they're constantly being adaptive, constantly trying to change and make things better to suit the other person's particular quirks. And here I would get into the differences between halflings and the difference between dwarves and their particular different personality traits. So yeah, I would say, you know, relationship story, different personality traits between the races makes coping a necessity. And it's almost like the compromises in a relationship in order to make it work, in order to make it work. Instead of actually like bringing down the relationship, this actually help the relationship to flourish. So it's almost like the compromise and the stuff that you have to do in order to keep that relationship alive actually is a place, it's a good place. So the being bitterness, where they're both like bitter enemies, that is, you know, they're posed against each other and it's like, oh, but that bitterness, they find a commonality and the two of them grow together to a place where at the end, following someone's traditions, they realize that they're really both the same person. They both want the same sort of thing. And it's like, how can we both keep that going? And it's if we split up. So, you know, how can we keep that going? It's like, how can we keep, or you know what? Maybe they're friends and then keeping the tradition of enemies alive pulls them apart. I don't know if I like that one as much. The other one feels better, that they go from that to a friendship. It's like a mutual understanding of, I think that works better. Well, although I could see him being friendly when they first meet him, and yeah, I could see that, because maybe they're friends at first, and then as the dwarves slowly are being killed off, it's like, what the heck's going on? Until the end, it's like, well, this is, let's just keep up our tradition of always being against each other. I think I like that better. So it'll go a relationship that goes from not friends, but just acquaintances or neighbors. Oh, okay. From neighbors to lifelong enemies. It just breaks down. This is a really depressing story. I'll have to see if I still like that. So the relationship story, as you can see me bouncing back and forth, I'm not actually thinking of the state of things like I was with the main character and influence character, which is much easier to come up with in 20 minutes, especially with the language that I grew up with. For the relationship story, it's much more fluid, and I'm trying to think of the dynamics. I'm more concerned with how that relationship grows over time and how things develop than I am about the specific instances of it. So, you know, I'm looking at, you know, the plot progressions: becoming someone worse, conceiving something new, preparing, faking an ability. I see that to me feels instinctively, intuitively, that feels sort of negative to me. Being attentive to a particular group, I can see that being a pain where it's like, oh, I've always got to make all these concessions for this other quote unquote race. And, you know, I can just hold on to my own understanding of things. But see, I'm more concerned with, like I said, the growth of that relationship and whether or not it's growing or whether or not it's improving. Is it developing into something else or is it digressing into something much worse? And then once I have that and I have those relationship different signposts figured out, then I would also weave that in to the main document. And I'll make a decision one way or the other. And for sure, you'll be able to see this with the Quip document. There'll be a link in the show notes, like I said. And you can see very quickly, so what has it been? I mean, I haven't completely decided on the relationship story. Like everything, there's always one element of the quad that's a little bit off. But I want to wrap this up. It's been 30 minutes of developing three through lines, and I have a pretty good idea of it. It's just a matter of actually writing out and seeing how that feels, particularly with the relationship story. But I really like the dynamic between the main character and the influence character, and you can see how that fits in with the overall story. So you can see in like less than an hour, been able to really quickly develop a strong narrative, something that I could actually sit down and write. My intention had been to do this before National November Writing Month so that it would perhaps inspire. It feels like every year right before November, I guess everybody gets the urge to write. And so it's like, oh, this would be a great way to inspire a really great narrative. And you can see how all this theory, all this stuff that you learn throughout the entire year, how can I actually apply it to a really cool story? And who knows, maybe I'll write it as a short story and see how it turns out. Because, you know, I've got tons of time to do stuff like that. But as you can see, it's a really fun process. I love doing this. I should probably do it more often just to show a practical approach to it. And what's worked for me is as far as working with other writers. And just so that you can see how you can bend the story form, not so much like bend it to make it just work with what's working in your head, but more like bend it either to the positive aspects of an element, to the negative aspects of an element. So you can see the breadth of each of these story points, you know, like with the diminishing someone or diminishing something for the main character's signpost too, you could see how it just made more sense to go with a more positive aspect of progress in the context of that particular story. And that's what's so great about knowing the story form of a story. It doesn't necessarily dictate exactly what you're supposed to write. It doesn't tell you this is exactly what you're supposed to do. It's like, well, if you want to tell this story, this is the thing you want to argue. This is the order of elements. And now it's up to you to, you know, tweak those elements and kind of bend them in a way that makes sense to you personally as an artist. Now, there may have been stuff as I was going through, you probably had a better idea, like, oh, you should have done this instead. That would have fit perfectly. Well, that's because you're a different artist than me and you have a different sensibility, which is great. That's why the story form doesn't dictate the quality of the story. It dictates the integrity of the story, but it doesn't dictate the actual end product of what it is. That's where the writer comes in and that's where the artistry comes into the telling of a story. So if you have any questions about how to build this all out, you can contact me at narrativefirst.com/contact. And of course, if you want access to the tools that I used in order to develop this story real quickly, you can visit app.narrativefirst.com to register. Finally, I want to talk about the Narrative First Atomizer, the very best way to quickly and effectively develop your stories. I'm really excited about this service because it collects every single thing that I've been working on for the last 10 years with Narrative First and puts it in a way, to me, that's really attractive, visually pleasing, really fun to use. You can use it anywhere. It works in your browser, so whether or not you have PC, Mac, all that stuff doesn't matter. You still have access to all these tools. I'm constantly updating it, constantly tweaking it. You know, right after I released it, I very quickly realized, well, this isn't the way the story forms are laid out. It doesn't work well, especially with mobile devices. It just doesn't work at all. It's not very effective. And so I went back in and came up with a more visual way of presenting the story forms, which I thought was really great. And I like the ability to be able to tweak it and modify it as I'm actually using it in the field. Like, I've been using these tools as I was going through, when I made the switch to deliberate storytelling and actually working more one-on-one instead of more of a mentorship sort of style, I loved being able to talk things out with clients and be able to quickly develop things. But because of the immediacy of either meeting face-to-face or over the phone or anything like that, it required an access to different tools and required a quicker way to, you know, find out the gist for different, like for instance, for knowledge. Like, well, how does that play in the story? Well, then I would have to go dig down and figure out where knowledge is and then come up with some gists and then see like, okay, well, if I approximate it, it's kind of like this, as opposed to just being able to type in knowledge and instantly you get like 10 gists. Like, that to me is a huge time saver. And once it's in there, you can do all kinds of really fun things, like the story time feature I wrote about a couple weeks ago, at least when this podcast will be published. And it's something I think I'm going to do every Monday morning, where I just come up with a random story time, random story there, and show how, well, with this random thing, all these different things that probably don't seem like they fit, you can actually create a really strong narrative in about an hour. Like, you can actually develop it out, kind of like what we did with the Red Lake. So I wanted to show, or not show, because I guess I'll have to do some videos to be able to show you, but just be able to talk about the different tools. It's broken up now into three major sections, gists, terms, and story forms. When you first sign in, also once I released it, it became quite clear to me that people were unaware of, like, well, will I be able to cancel? What is that? Well, yeah, of course. So the idea is that, you know, you have your dashboard where you'll be able to update payment information and passwords and email accounts. You can even put a picture of yourself up there, you know, the typical stuff that you're used to, and obviously be able to switch your plan at any time. Right now, there's a monthly plan and a yearly plan. Being able to support a service like this and to be able to make sure that it's constantly improving, constantly always have new features. I have so many ideas for different features. It's crazy. In fact, there's one that I really want to do in the next couple days, just based on recording today's podcast about the Red Lake. And I can do it. I just have to find the time. It's just a really cool thing that you could do. To me, that's a no-brainer to be able to support that. And so I gave two options. One's a monthly and one's the yearly. The yearly one makes way more sense to me because I think it comes out to like $14 a month, which is crazy. So like 50 cents a day, I think is what it is, right? So that I can have instant access to all these gists and every single term. And it's not just the dictionary terms. Like, it's my version of the terms. Like, you know, knowing that the relationship story through line is not an argument between the main character and versus impact character, that it's actually about a relationship and how that fits in. And then, of course, all the links to all the hundreds of articles that I've written and the podcasts and the analyses. All that stuff's all going to be wrapped up into one single service. That to me, and the story forms, I forgot I don't have Wilder People in here, Hunt for Wilder People. So I'll be doing that probably right after this podcast. It'll be in there if you sign up. Thor Ragnarok, that one will be in there. The Throughline Thursdays, it's really cool. I just added the most recent Throughline Thursdays that are just here in the dashboard so that you can quickly be able to click on them. And of course, the most recent story forms are in there. I like it because I can actually put up the story form before I write the analysis, so you can actually have access to it. So I have the story form for Spider-Man Homecoming that I've had for months, and I just haven't had a chance to actually write the analysis of it. And so now I have time to, I can just put up the story form and you'll have access to it. Like, oh yeah, I can see where that is. And then eventually I'll have time to put the analysis in there and the Throughline Thursdays and all that stuff. But I'm just really excited about it because it's like, I have a way, like, as soon as I finish the film, I could put up the story form in a matter of minutes. It's like, to me, it's really cool. And then be able to collate them, so, and be able to provide all kinds of information as far as like, well, what's the main character problem of desire? What are films that are like that? Like, I was able to do today with the focus of logic, like, okay, well, what are other films that have an overall story symptom or focus of logic? Where's that? And very quickly be able to see that. Essentially, what I did was the tools that I would love to have in order to be able to work day in and day out with the dramatic theory of story and to be able to help you develop stories, like just the stuff that I love having access to. That's what this service is all about. You know, all the articles that I've written, all the podcasts, all that stuff, those are all meant to support a more thoughtful approach to storytelling. And so that's why I'm so excited to be able to offer this. So for the GIS right now, so if, when you click into GIS, you get a story time, which is, okay, so there's a random story here. This is a story about a group of sergeants who struggle with being restrictive towards a monster. Okay, that could be interesting. Maybe they're not Area 51, but something like that. And these are military sergeants who struggle with being restrictive towards a monster. Alex, an egg farm worker, faces personal issues around fearing animals. Oh, that works. He meets Tigerian? Tyrogen. That's such a weird name. Ty. A factory assembly line. Oh, it should be a factory assembly line worker. Who challenges everyone with being the child of a famous person. Oh, as lovers. Whoa, okay. As lovers, Alex and Ty are polar opposites when it comes to playing piano. This is a really cool story. Okay. This is my horror film, right? Because it's monsters and fearing animals. I'm actually saving that for later. Maybe I'll do that next week. And then at the very bottom, give me another story. You can just click on give me another story and you get a completely different one. Let's see, what do we get this time? This is a story about of candidates who struggle with working with a loser. Jackson, a flight attendant, faces personal issues around being held hostage by dancers. He meets Kimberly, a geek squad who challenges everyone with being polite. As adopted brother and sister, Jackson and Kimberly are polar opposites when it comes to being vicious towards the police. So you can see those are the four through lines. And, you know, it's just a random story. And in the future, you'll be able to click on these things and very quickly adjust them. So you can keep the things that you like and be able to quickly adjust the ones that you want. But the feature that I was really excited about, it occurred to me that it would be great to have almost a reverse GIST search feature. So in other words, just search for ingredients. And this could possibly be installed before the podcast actually comes out. If not, it will be very soon. So for instance, like, if you were writing Thor Ragnarok and you knew that he charges in without thinking, right? I would say charges in without thinking. So it would be great if you could just type in, you know, search for ingredients for narrative elements, like, just charges in without thinking. And then, you know, you could quickly, it would say, well, it looks like the element you're looking for is pursuit, because charging in is a gist for pursuit. I think it is. It better be. Let's see. Charging in, let's see. Is it being chasing? It's not. All right, so see, that would be another one. I would put charging in. So very quickly, he's charging in. Oh, okay, so then you're thinking of an element of pursuit. Now, without thinking, it would probably also actually bring up consider and maybe at the plot level, contemplations. But for sure, pursuit, you could see like, oh, okay. And then when you would click on pursuit, you would be able to see different films that have that same element as a problem element. And that to me is super exciting. I just thought of that yesterday. I just come up with that and I just thought that was a really, really cool way. So you'll be able to, you know, it's almost another way of learning these elements and how they work. So it's like you are coming from the experience of, well, I know that charging in without thinking creates conflict, but what would be the actual element there? What would be the element in a story form that would bring that about? And then it will very quickly provide you the answers with that. When you go to the terms, right now it's just a list of the terms. There'll be a very visual approach to it that's coming rather soon. Let's say you were conceptualizing is the thing that you were thinking about and you clicked on conceptualizing. Obviously you have the entry for there. 10 random gists pop up, working out how to stop something, devising something, figuring out a diabolical plan, planning an escape. And of course, you can go to more gists and you get everything there. Again, as I described with the Red Lake, you have the, you know, devising something. So devising a building, if you open up that drop down, outdoing someone by skillful planning, outdoing a demon by skillful planning, outdoing a loser by skillful planning, just all these different ways that you can very quickly brainstorm ideas of how those elements will play into your story. That's what I was providing for you here. And then, of course, I did something else that I've always wanted. If you just look up, like, let's say universe, you look up, oh, what's universe? What's that about? You have the gist. So being a particular group, being stuck with children, being stuck to a wall, being beautiful, all that stuff, right? Well, I also automatically, well, okay, so if you're looking for universe, you're obviously looking for through lines. So maybe you're looking for the overall story through line, main character through line of universe, influence character. And it actually lists below the entry different examples. So, you know, for the overall story through line, it says these narratives share a similar overall story through line in universe. And it's got It Happened One Night, Boys in the Hood, Chinatown, and The Verdict. And of course, if you click on explore overall story through line of universe, it will give you all of them. Main character, these main characters struggle personally with problems defined by universe. Joe and All That Jazz, The Barracks and Stalag 17, Shrek and Shrek and Jane and Jane the Virgin. Jane the Virgin, that's that television series that there's a, or the pilot episode. She's a universe character in that. And then influence character, you got Chad from Company of Men, Brian in Glee, another television show, Lot in Being John Malkovich, and of course the writer George Dreiman from The Lives of Others. And then finally, the relationship story. So what does a relationship story in universe look like? You have the mother-son relationship in Babadook, the Hitler-youth relationship in Apt Pupil. That would be the book, not the awful movie. The breaking down adulthood cynicism relationship in The Big Chill, and the partner's relationship in Zootopia. And of course, you can explore that as always. So, and that goes all the way down to the elements. So if, obviously, if you're looking up something like... let's see, what's a good element? Oh, induction. No, nobody knows what induction means. I don't even know what induction means. Figuring out the possibilities, hypothesizing, thinking inconclusively. If you go there, you get, okay, these narratives share a similar overall story problem of induction. Oh, Lord of the Flies and The Sweet Smell of Success. Tarzan and Tarzan, that's not right. That needs to be changed because, like I said, the story form is off on that. Influence character, Ian and My Big Fat Greek Wedding, and relationship story through line. The parent-kid, young romance relationship in South Park, Bigger, Longer, and Uncut. The sister's romance relationship in Frozen. Really. The protector-ward relationship in Spirited Away. So obviously these aren't films that really jump to mind when it comes to how does induction actually work. But there you go. Like when you go to look up a certain element, whether it's an element, an issue, a concern, a through line, it'll give you from the four perspectives what that particular story point looks like. And again, it's giving you that experience so that if you've seen those films, you've had the experience of that element in play already. You already have it in your mind. You already know exactly how that plays out. Like a main character problem of desire, pretty much everybody who, at least as far as screenwriting goes, knows aliens. And so they know that experience of a main character moving from desire to ability, where she has all this fear and she's yearning for the time that she could have spent with her daughter, to a place where she actually has the fortitude and ability to take care of herself and, you know, take care of a child. She's actually able to overcome being stuck in the past, kind of like the dwarf in the last story. So everybody, you've had those experiences if you've seen those films. And so all this is doing, what the atomizer is doing, is bringing that back up so that you could very quickly relate to it and then be able to translate it into your own story. You know, the idea is just to get back to what it is that you're working on, whether or not you're collaborating with someone else or you're doing it on your own. The idea is to be able to relate to it, have the experience, remember that experience so that you can create something that's personal to you that actually communicates that story point without too much trouble. And so that's where I'm always, that's kind of the intent behind everything that's in here. And then finally, the story forms section. Obviously, this is a giant list of 350 plus story forms, including the 20 or 40 so, I forget how many I've done through Narrative First, where these are story forms that you know are, they've been vetted by me. So I've actually gone through and made sure every single story point, and I'm sure there's one or two that are off, is accurate and to, you know, the best of it's the most accurate version of a story form. Obviously, if you've heard earlier this year about the, or if you remember the Captain America, what was it? I don't even remember. Oh, Civil War was the name of it. That debacle over whether or not Iron Man was the main character. Clearly, Iron Man is the main character in that narrative. Clearly, he is. And clearly, he's not in Spider-Man. So, yes, there is a difference. And I'm not just a Tony Stark fan. And I'm sure you heard me talk before about the Terminator story form. Originally, she was I think she was holistic mental sex, and that was quickly changed. I mean, that was proven to be incorrect or inaccurate. And then also the Sixth Sense, how, you know, it's CalArts at one time we came up with a different story form that was much stronger. So anytime there's a different understanding, something that a stronger interpretation of it, obviously, if it can be proven to be a better version of the story form, a more accurate collection of story points, I could very easily change it here, and it's not that big a deal. So this is the most up-to-date, most accurate collection of story forms that you'll find anywhere. I mean, you might look elsewhere and you'll find story forms and they're way off. Like, they're not even close to being what the actual story is saying. So at least here, you know, you're getting like the most accurate. You're getting the most accurate representation of that narrative's thematics. And when you go in and you check out a story form, like let's pick something besides Blade Runner and Aliens. I feel like totally obsessed with that. I think Get Out is in here, right? Get Out, I have a Through Line Thursday in here. So Get Out, that's one that I wrote an analysis on earlier this year, which I thought was a great, great, great movie. It's got a really strong narrative structure to it. So when you click into it, you know, you get a giant, beautiful look at the four through lines, that Through Line Thursdays. And they're the same images that I've picked, you know, to represent what the influence character through line looks like, what the relationship story through line looks like, what the main character looks like, and the overall story through lines look like. And of course, you can click on them, like I said, and they take you right to that through line. And then each through line's set of story points, developed a really great way of presenting the elements in their quad. So it's specific to that quad. So if you look at, like, let's say Chris Washington, the main character in it, his problem is equity and his solution is inequity. His focus is projection and his direction is speculation. Now those four are together under mind, and I show visually how equity drives conflict into falsehood, which drives conflict into memory, which drives conflict into mind. It's like this like funnel that comes up from the bottom. And I just love how it's a very visual representation of it. And then the quad there is arranged in the way that it's arranged in the model of the mind. And then, of course, the unique ability and critical flaws are off to the side. And underneath, the signposts are presented in the slide bump slide fashion and color-coded. So very quickly here, I can see, I don't even know the terms, but I see dark light, which is a bump, bump, bump. So it's four act structure here for the main character. And if you've seen the film and you know that he kind of just goes through, his personal issues are very episodic in nature. It's very chunky. It's like, okay, I'm dealing with this chunk and then I'm dealing with that chunk and then the last chunk. And it's just a great way to be able to very quickly understand the thematic structure of that particular through line. And of course, because this was a Through Line Thursdays feature from Narrative First, I included this synopsis here so that you can read about the main character and why he is particularly in mind, like why that is his main character's perspective. From his main character perspective, the audience experienced what it feels like to tumble into that sunken place and feel as if no one can hear you scream. Yeah, that's great. So that's his stuff that's going on. And of course, every single story point in here is clickable. So let's say, okay, so his third signpost is preconscious, right? So that's the three quarters of the way in, he deals with preconscious. Well, what are other films where there is a main character signpost four of preconscious? So you come in here and I have my own definition of what that is. I present my own explanation of, you know, the main character signpost three of preconscious, and then you get a list of films or narratives that share that very same thing. So obviously Get Out is listed here, but you have Memento, Eve's Bayou, Room with a View, American History X. Oh, Unforgiven, Terminator. That's when Sarah Connor is going through preconscious. So, oh, that's a very typical sort of thing. Very quickly, like if you're coming up with your story and it has the same, let's say, narrative, same story form as Get Out, and the main character, you're struggling, you're like, I don't know how a third signpost in preconscious. What does that look like? Well, you have how many films here? 12, 15 films here that you can actually go sit down if you don't remember, you know, what that actually felt like when the main character was going through it. You can go and have that experience again and be able to bring that experience into your own writing. So to me, it's just, it's very exciting. I wish I had this. I'm basically just building something that I love and something that I wish that I had when I am writing and when I'm working with other people, and, or not other people, but other writers. It's just stuff that, it's just tools that make it, well, one, A, more enjoyable, which to me always means there'll be a better end product. You know, it's kind of like whatever emotional state you're in, that's what's going to come out. So if you're in a better emotional state, if you're actually enjoying what it is you're doing, if you're enjoying the tools you're using, even something as simple as the fonts and how everything's arranged and the design of it, if you're enjoying it, then you're going to have, be in a better state of mind, and then the work that you create is going to be, it'll be more honest with you and more just, it'll have that same emotional state in the work. And so that's what I just want to make sure that that's available to everyone. So as I mentioned, I'm always developing new things that'll be put in here. If you want to see what it looks like, there are screenshots on the front of Narrative First. And of course, I'll be doing some videos over the next couple of weeks so that you'll be able to see it. And feel free to register. Just go to app.narrativefirst.com. And of course, obviously, if you have any ideas for things that you wish were in there or something that you think I might have overlooked, definitely send it my way, because it doesn't take me long to put it in there. I mean, it's a really quick process. And all I want to do is just make sure everyone has access to these tools so that the quality of storytelling just keeps going up and up and up. I mean, if you think about the difference now with the state of storytelling 20 years ago, the difference is insane. I mean, just the increase from mid-90s to 2015, the difference in quality of storytelling is just astronomical. I just know that the more writers understand what it is they're actually writing, the more effective their storytelling can be, and the more effectively they can communicate their heart's truest intent, which is everything that I'm behind, everything that I want to make sure happens. So thank you again for listening. Thank you again for listening to this season, season 2 of the Narrative First podcast. Season 3 will start up in 2018 after the holidays have cleared out and after I've opened up all my presents and celebrated the new year and 2018 has begun. We will start season 3 of the Narrative First podcast. And if you have any ideas for next season's podcast, feel free to write to me. Again, that is at narrativefirst.com/contact. And of course, you can register for the Narrative First Atomizer at app.narrativefirst.com. Have a great holiday season, and I'll see you next year.